Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Today we saw the Parliament debating about the budget presentation that was done last week by the Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim. And of course, in the budget, there has been quite interesting conversations that we've seen over the past 2 days, over the past weekend. It is having a smaller budget deficit from negative 4.3% to negative 5.0% that was seen in last year's budget. We're looking at revenue at 308 billion with expenditure close to about 400 billion or about 394 billion ringgit. That comes to about the deficit of 86 billion. So this is going to be an interesting debate when it comes to how the government plans to separate the conversation of where the spending is going to be. DevEx is going to be down. The OPEX is going to be down as well. But the overall expenditure is down, DevEx is down, but the operating expenditure is up by 1.2%. So this and more needs to be explained further. Joining us in the studio is Tan Hui Beng, the Deputy Tax Leader of Deloitte Malaysia. Hui Beng, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us. I'm sure there's a lot that needs to be uncovered. Maybe you can walk through with us in terms of the top line.
Yeah, thanks Ibrahim for having me once again. So maybe let us just remind ourselves the theme for this budget 2024 is economic reforms empowering the people. And Ibrahim, this is a largest budget allocation in history, actually, right? We're talking about 393.8 billion, and out of that, 303.8 is OPEX, and the rest, of course, is for development expenditure. And, yep. And clearly, there are a lot of challenges that lies ahead, you know, with all these numbers. But again, when the Prime Minister did this, there are a few objectives. Number one is to continue to spur the economic activity, whether it's from foreign direct investment or from domestic direct investment, both will be taken care of. And that is also to ensure that there will continue to be a new investment and also reinvestment. That's from the macroeconomic perspective. At the same time, as always, I think the government will have to protect the well-being of the rakyat. So it's against this background and against the sluggish and the global economic headwind. The question is then, the government has really a big task ahead, i.e. To make sure that it's able to, you know, to continue to collect tax revenue collection moving forward, because that is a key factor to ensure that we can go with this plan. And one thing I want to highlight is that, if you could recall, there are many policies that have been announced in the last few months. Let's just name a few. National Energy Transition Roadmap, okay? The NETR, where energy is deemed to be a key engine to the nation's growth. Then we have a new Industrial Master Plan 2023, whereby we focus on the Malaysia's manufacturing sector. And don't forget about the realigned 12 Malaysian plan, right? So this this Mandani Budget 2024, actually, they are pretty aligned with all this. It complements the three recently announced policy to really make sure that Malaysia has a chance to become one of the most dynamic nations in Asia, right? So it's against this background. Therefore, we will later be talking about how do we want to collect more taxes and also to protect the revenue base.
Let's talk about that. Revenue is up 1.5% estimated at 308 billion for this year.
Yeah.
Sorry, 303 billion for this year. Expected revenue will be 308 billion for next year. That's up 1.5%.
Right.
But we're looking at an elevated government debt of about 62% of GDP. Mm. However, this does mean that the government debt remains below the debt ceiling level of 65%. And how the government is looking in terms of increasing their revenue is by doing bibs and bobs, I would argue. SST up from 6% to 8%. We're looking at luxury tax from 5% to 10%. I'm not too sure. I don't know whether even you are aware in terms of how the classification is. What is a 5%? What is a 10%? What is something in between? Do you feel that these kind of new taxation levies are going to be important?
Yeah, thanks. And Ibrahim, I don't know whether you noticed. It has been a while now. This year's budget, the Prime Minister actually presented the so-called not so good news first, the new taxes first, and then he talked about the other part. So this is something quite interesting. But I mean, he's being very frank in that way. He said, look, you know, there we need to do this. That's for sure. So he mentioned about three important parts. Let's just go on the first part, which is on the capital gains tax. Right, that is one major item, capital gains tax, which will be introduced from 1st March 2024 at the rate of 10% on the gain from the sale of unlisted shares. Right, so at least it's good because it's for unlisted shares. We don't want the capital market to be affected, so it's for unlisted shares. Right now, the question here is then, will this hamper mergers and acquisitions, restructuring, so on and so forth? So businesses, of course, have put in their paper to say that we have to be very careful on this. And I think the government listened properly on this. And yes, there is a capital gains tax on sale of shares on unlisted company, but there will also be exemption for intra-group transfer, intra-group restructuring, and also transfer of shares pursuant to an approved IPO. So given that, perhaps this is maybe a good way of collecting taxes without hampering the M&A activity. So that's one point, 10% of capital gains tax from 1 March 2024.
Also exempted is the venture capital companies, which is also the point of us trying to spur economic growth and buy-in from investors to empower startups being well-capitalized and well-financed. So if you look at this, intra-group transaction, no need. VCs, no need. A few other things, no need. So in the end, it's just a small fraction. We talk about CGT for the past 2 weeks now, we've been on this show. Doesn't seem like it's going to be a lot of revenue coming in from this.
Yeah, so that therefore it's because of that, probably a combination of few new taxes would be required. Yeah, so it remains to be seen what to be collected, but that capital gains tax at 10%, maybe in time to come it can be increased, but for now it's 10%. So yeah, one good point, we are not very sure as to the amount, the quantum that to be collected, right? That remains to be seen. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Another area of concern for me, at least, is the SST being raised from 6% to 8%. However, there are some exemptions, as mentioned by the Prime Minister, in telco and a few other things.
Food and beverage.
Yeah, food and beverage. Yeah. I think non-alcoholic food and beverage.
Yeah.
So, again, this would bring about new taxes, but we all know that this might necessarily harm the consumption of rakyat, so particularly the B40 and the M40. How does this factor in?
Yeah, so 6 to 8% is an additional 2% across the board, except for that two categories that you mentioned, F&B, as well as telecommunication. So that is spared, that remains at 6, right? At the same time, there's a few new services are deemed to be taxable services, logistic, underwriting, brokerage, karaoke. Karaoke is going to be to be so-called deemed taxable services. So there's some sturdy number crunching here. The additional 2% apparently will result in additional revenue of about 900 million in 2024. So well, some amount to be collected as well, right? But in my view, this 2% thing or service tax SST is really a stopgap measure. It's an interim measure. Later, I'm sure we'll be talking about that. Something's missing, right?
Yeah. 118 pages, if I'm not mistaken, definitely over 100 pages. Yeah. Not one mention of GST. Again, something that I've been talking about for 2 weeks now on the show.
Absolutely. There are so many discussions in the forums, media, right? Everyone calling for government to really look at GST. And of course, government is aware of that. But of course, probably timing is not right for them. So that's something is missing. Unfortunately, there is a misconception. Well, maybe it's a real thing. People do regard GST as regressive tax because it's a consumption tax, right?
It is.
And therefore, one expect the middle income and lower income level people will spend more on the basic things, and therefore incurring that vis-a-vis the higher income people who will be able to save more and invest in service spending, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, to address this issue, a cash transfer system is quite important to be built so that you can manage
which is the
impact.
Scheme Rahmat Tunai.
Yeah.
Which is also being pumped in, and then of course with other cash incentives into the bomber, police and the likes, I think 1,000 ringgit if I'm not mistaken. So is that enough to shore up, assuming the GST is brought maybe 2025?
That could help, but I think a more systematic way of providing a rebate back to the affected taxpayer will be needed. But the point here is that you can have additional 2% to 8%, but I still think that this is really interim, right? A long-term solution probably is going back to the full-fledged GST that we used to have, right? So I think that should be...
Were you a bit like me in terms of waiting for a hard start date of GST?
I do, actually, because, year in, year out, we have been talking about this, right? Every year, we will definitely have one comment on GST that is missing. And obviously, my hope is that there is, at some point, right, the proper a good GST system has to be brought back, at whatever rate that is appropriate, right? But I think we have to bring that back. The way I look at it, right?
The first time you and I spoke many years ago. We were talking about the global minimum tax, and of course, as the international tax leader role on top of the deputy tax leader role that you have for Deloitte Malaysia, I'm sure this is good news for you. But the way I look at it is 2025 is the start date. And for companies making more than 700 million euros revenue, do we even have a company that makes more than 700 million euros?
Indeed, Ibrahim. So speaking of global minimum tax, they're actually...
Of 15%.
50% or 15%. Actually, there are two categories of taxpayers. One is our very own Malaysian-based headquartered MNC, our listed co, for example, the large one, right? So they have operations in Malaysia, for sure. At the same time, there are operations elsewhere, in UK, Netherlands, Indonesia, Papua New Guinea.
This is the outbound, the banks, the petrol companies.
Manufacturing companies. This is the Malaysian base, right?
Yeah.
And the other type is actually the foreign, for example, is a Malaysian subsidiary of the UK parent, Malaysian subsidiary of the US parent. So there are two categories of people that may be affected. And the 2025, initially it was meant to be 2024, people start preparing for that.
That's right.
And then, so-called the good news in 2025. The question is, right, actually, is this really a good news? Does it really provide us a breathing space or not, right? In my view, it depends. If a Malaysian conglomerate has operations in Malaysia and also have various operations in country that's going to only do it in 2025, yes, then you have a little bit of breathing space. But if Malaysian parent has operations in Europe, for example, or in Canada, in Korea, in Japan, who is going to do it in 2024, then you are really affected in that way, right? So it's not really good news, actually, you think about it. It depends on the particular facts of that group, yeah? And the foreign, the subsidiaries of the foreign-based multinational, they are having a lot of tax incentive in Malaysia. Yeah, that provide them a little bit of time, give them some ample time, probably to visit the investment promotion agency and to see how they want to sort out their tax holiday. Because tax holiday company potentially would be affected by this global minimum tax, right? So all in all, may not necessarily be a good news, but it gives us a bit of more time to taxpayers to get things ready,
High value goods tax.
Right.
Let's talk about that. Where is the reality of the government getting more money from that? Because from what we heard, tourists are not necessarily being impacted by this. So, of course, this doesn't impact the tourism industry. Or if they were taxed, they can claim for rebate or refund at the airport upon departure, just like how we experience it elsewhere, say in Spain or any other EU countries. Right. Is it going to get a lot of money?
So we are talking about 5 to 10% and that rate have not been really fixed per se. So within 5 to 10 and on certain threshold value.
Yeah, I mean like a Lamborghini, is that a 10% or a Louis Vuitton, is that a 5%? We don't know.
We don't know. But the example given is watches and jewelry, but I'm sure handbag at some point will be included as well, right? So as I mentioned earlier, probably you need a couple of different new taxes to be combined together to give
what constitutes as a luxury good? Because if you think about it, an Apple computer can cost, I don't know, 30, 40,000.
Could be, yeah, it could be. Yeah.
We don't have any guidelines for that?
No, not yet. But I think if you look at it, I think the direction of travel is you know, the additional item, the watches, you know, the jewelries, not the basic item. I mean, Apple is important for work, but, you know, I think they're looking at more than that, right? But,
okay.
Yeah.
And do you feel that this is going to get that, or this is more of the, this is step number one. In the future, we're going to get more clarity, we're going to do more tweaking, but that important first step is important to do now.
That's right. I this is to really, you know, the first step. But my concern on this type of taxes is, I'm not sure whether this will fuel the black market, right, in terms of all the goods that we mentioned earlier. So that's also my concern. So I think a proper monitoring of that probably will be required. So
okay, you're touching on 2 points now.
Yeah.
The black market, i.e. the shadow economy even, which can be addressed in the final item that I want to talk about when it comes to reform measures, which is, of course, the mandatory e-invoicing.
Yeah.
Some of your peers from some of your competitors in terms of the Big Four has already mentioned this. Some of the smaller accounting companies have already mentioned this. But let's run through the whole e-invoicing procedure as well. Do you feel that this is an important step to take, particularly when we look at the rollout of the e-invoicing? It's just mostly the big companies first. What was the threshold again?
100 million. 100 million.
For next year?
Yeah, for two.
And then...
plus another year for the rest.
For the rest.
Yeah, yes,
okay.
The
so meaning that the mom and pop shop also has to take on e-invoicing, or else individual taxpayers like me can't enjoy the rebates eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would force ourselves to choose vendors that would do e-invoicing, or else we can't claim the relief.
Correct. So if you think about it, is e-invoicing really a tax measure? No, it's not really a tax measure, but somehow the implementation of e-invoicing would benefit or would enhance the ability of the government to collect taxes, because it will kind of like plug any leakage in the black market, in the shadow economy, right? That is very important, and you can imagine in certain countries, I mean, we are talking about the government, the Inland Revenue of anywhere in the world will be able to have the real-time data. Imagine that, right? I mean, for example, you know, you play badminton just now, you bought some record, you want to claim some reliefs, you know, all that thing will be, you know, the data will be kept at the system, and you probably don't have to keep it hard copy anymore, right?
Yeah.
So you can imagine everything real time. And in certain countries, the Inland Revenue has the ability to prepare tax computation for you. You just need to
verify. That's what I'm going after, because I want my tax computation, my tax bill, so to speak, to be ready.
Anytime,
and then I just sign off on it,
correct,
you know?
Correct. So that probably will be the way forward. So all in all, yes, I think e-invoicing is a good thing. But my only concern is, you know, there's additional 2 months for the large company, from June to August next year. But I'm really worried about it, because I'm not sure whether 2 months is really meaningful. But hopefully it provides a bit more time, breathing space to people. But I was thinking that it could be maybe 6 months or even a year, right? Mm. So 2 months is a bit short, and we got to see how people will cope with this. But therefore, it can only mean that, you know, whoever is affected really got to start preparing for that, because it's a large reform as well, right?
Okay. Yeah. Now, Hui Beng, before we move to the expenditure part, let's conclude the revenue part. Services tax, capital gains tax, high-value goods tax, global minimum tax, and finally, mandatory e-invoicing that could assist in the tax collection. These five elements, do you feel that this is really going to expand our revenue base?
I think it will, but in terms of the magnitude-wise, nothing is better than having GST together with this. Then I think that's the most ideal. But this is a good starting point in my view, right? To have some as a measure to collect more taxes in that respect. I mean, the government definitely will not want to burden the right by increasing the tax rate anymore for individuals, right? So therefore, there must be another alternative, and therefore, this probably makes sense at this point in time. Although, it's a gap measure, in my view, for the 2% increase in service tax, right?
Yeah. So, does this mean that at this very early stage, GST will be introduced in the 2025 budget?
That's a very tricky question, because year and out, we have been guessing.
Well, every year, we say, this must be.
I don't know. I honestly don't know, and it requires the strongest political will to get this done. Honestly speaking, right? It is evident in many countries.
But 170 countries have done it.
Exactly. So.
And there's only like less than 200 countries in the world.
That's right. So it's evident that, GST should be the way forward, right? So
it's regressive, but this is the best consumption tax that we have right now.
Correct. Yes. Okay,
finally, I want to talk about, before we move on to expenditure, the Public Finance and Fiscal Responsibility Act 2023. It outlines to consolidate the fiscal deficit, sustaining DevEx and of course development expenditure, and of course this is going to be guided by the 12th Malaysia Plan as well as the midterm review. Is this going to help?
I think, I'm confident if it's being implemented accordingly and everyone walks the talk, right? No leakage, then the answer is I think we should see some, you know, substantial improvement on that. And I'm quite confident that that will happen, but on the premise that I've just mentioned earlier, right?
Okay. Let's look at the expenditure now. Targeted subsidies removal, including that of petrol, fuel and diesel. Yeah. Let's focus on that for the time being.
Right.
Is the plan clear, at least from your end?
In my view, noble objective, but not. I think I need more detail. I was hoping for more details on that, right? In terms of implementation, I think the theory is there, policy is there, but I think we need to have a... We need to really, I mean, the government probably will take a while to come up with the real policy and the mechanics of that. I think that's very important because the targeted subsidy must be the way forward. Otherwise, it's not sustainable for Malaysia, right? Yeah, yeah. At the moment, it's quite, you know, general.
Some other items include revamping the economic structure of the country, empowering the SMEs, developing local talents, restructuring the primary sectors, and of course, at least for me, and I don't know whether you can mention, but the restructuring of the Bumi Putra agenda, where most of the items are now going to be put under Yayasan Pelaburan Bumi Putra, or YPB, or PNB. And then Yayasan Pelaburan Hartanah Bumi Putra, including that of Equina, is going to be parked under PNB now. Including that of Bandar Malaysia, that is going to be parked under, probably that is going to be parked under Hartanah. Seems to be a lot of restructuring for the Bumi Putra agenda, on top of all this revamping the economic structure. These are very, very important for us to boost our economic growth and to see how we can restructure that. Is this aiming towards that, this budget?
Indeed, a consolidation of various stuff that you just mentioned, yeah, I think if you combine it together and implement it properly, right, in a timely manner, yes, I think the answer is we are heading towards the right directions and consolidation of certain entities that you mentioned earlier. I think it's quite important to be under one umbrella and you have a proper monitoring, be very efficient about that. I think that's a good stuff.
My biggest takeaway from this budget, Hubeng, is this. I personally believe this is a budget that is aimed towards restructuring the economic structure of the country. Mm-hmm. And the implementation of it. Every single year, the implementation and monitoring of the budget is critical. But I feel that this year's budget, or next year's budget for that matter, the budget that was presented this year, is the most critical because there's so many things at stake right now. I feel that if the government fails to implement it or execute it well, game over for us.
I have to admit that I concur with you. This is a reality because we are at a juncture where, it's quite a critical juncture, right? Ooh. And therefore, there are plans, and the plans needs to be executed accordingly in a timely manner. Again, I go back to the main thought of walking talk and then making sure it's done as per plan. Of course, every sectors, public, private sectors and everyone here have to support the framework of the Madani. I mean, we need that. And then if we do that, I think we should be able to get out of the wood.
All right. Maybe you can share with us the top two or three things that you feel is the key challenge for executing this budget. And of course, implementation is one of them. Outside of implementation, where do you feel the challenges are going to be like, or the risk factor, I suppose? I know it's not there.
Yeah, it's not there. Definitely it's not there. And it's not tax question, but I will answer you, right? From me as a being a rakyat Malaysia, right? I think it all goes back to a very important part, the political stability. You know, the last 5 years, we have three governments, one pandemic. Right, I would love to see that political stability to remain for a few years with all these things going in together, right? Everyone in Malaysia, you know, take the position that we must bring Malaysia back to the center stage. I think that's important. And this also leads to a very important point that I want to mention. Remember, we talk about global minimum tax. We talk about tax incentive may no longer be the main factor to attract FDI.
We spoke about this years ago.
Yeah, and I'm going to reiterate a few points. You're right. You have a good recollection of that. So tax incentive may not be that important. Still important, but may not be the main factor. Yeah. So what factor are we talking about? political stability, infrastructure development, human resource development, so on and so forth. So all this ties in together, right? To make sure Malaysia remain as the top destination for FDI. And at the same time, not forgetting our domestic investment, right? So if you couple all together at one go with political stability, with the execution of this budget 2024, I think we should be okay.
Okay. Yeah. I can't help but feel that there is a sense of concern and worry. But I'm talking about myself.
Right.
There's a concern, there's an element of worry. And of course, but that whole excitement is there. That whole re-energized, invigorated feeling of I think I can pull this off along with my fellow countrymen. I have that feeling. I don't know about you. What's the takeaway here? My final question to you. What's your final takeaway?
I can only say this, Ibrahim. I know if you listen to Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim at the end of the speech, I think it's a very important things that he has said. He said Malaysia have a lot of resources, a lot of talent, you know, good people, good natural resources. I'm very hopeful, and we're hopeful that, you know, Malaysia, under all the policies that I mentioned together with the budget, I'm hopeful and I can sanguine that we will and we can, you know, be back to the center stage as one of the Asian economic powerhouse. But all this requires focus, political stability. I know it's ranjau sepanjang jalan, you know. Mm. But I only say this, if all of us are focused, everyone plays their role, I think we can get to the destination sooner rather than later, inshallah.
Thank you very much. That was Tan Hui Beng, the Deputy Tax Leader of Deloitte. You can read more about the presentation of what Deloitte has made. Just head off to their website, Deloitte Malaysia. Also, we are carrying this kind of information and news throughout the week. So do stay on Niaga Awani as well as on my show, Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. That's it for us for now. Catch you in the next one.